Good afternoon, everybody. I thought I'd start with just, for those that aren't familiar with the background, summarising where we are. I mean, the issue has been we had a deposit in the Pilbara. We wanted to get access to BHP's infrastructure on commercial terms. And we set about using Part 3A to get access to the railway so that the deposit could be developed. So we started in June 2004, and it took us quite a long time to get to the point of a recommendation. There were a number of technical issues that had to be resolved, but we got a positive recommendation from the National Competition Council in March 2006. Unfortunately, the then Treasurer, Peter Costello, found himself unable to make a decision. He was deemed to say no, and so we then appealed to the Australian Competition Tribunal against his deemed decision of saying no to the NCC's recommendations. At the same time, and this probably isn't as well understood, we not only wanted to get access to BHP's railways, we wanted to get access to Rio's railways. I think there was always a recognition in the company that we're going to have to build our own railway for the major deposit. The issue is there's lots of small deposits all over the Pilbara, 50 million tonne or so of ore. An ore body of that size can be perfectly commercial to get into production if only you get access to infrastructure. But it won't justify building its own infrastructure. It's just not big enough to sustain the expense of a rail and port facilities. And it was our view that we should try and get access to infrastructure using Part 3A. And the problem with Rio's railway, it was protected by a court decision from a few years earlier that said the railway was, using the railway would be using a production process, and therefore it was exempt from Part 3A. So we then went through a very protracted legal process to overturn that argument. We went to the federal court, we got a decision our way, we went to the full federal court, we got two judges deciding our way and one who thought that he needed more information to make a decision, so we ended up in the High Court and all six judges decided the railway was definitely not the use of a production process and therefore could be subject to Part 3A. As soon as we could see the light at the end of the tunnel in relation to the production process issue, we then sought to declare the rest of the railways of the Pilbara. So we put in an application for Hammersley's network, for the Galsworthy Railway, and for the Robe Railway. Fortunately, having learnt from the previous time round, I think all parties learnt, we were quicker through the process. We got a positive recommendation in August 2008. The Treasurer accepted the NCC's recommendation, and BHP and Rio appealed to the Australian Competition Tribunal. And that's where we sit at the moment. All four cases are now due to come up in front of the Australian Competition Tribunal, starting in end of September and probably going to last for about 3 months. For those of you who aren't familiar with declaration, you have to hit six criteria. You have to hit all of them. You have to satisfy a tick in every box. And I've just listed them up there, and I'll make some comments. One of them is it cannot be, you know, it can't be that it would be economic to duplicate the facility instead of getting access. And from our point of view, in terms of social efficiency, this is just a no-brainer. The railways for Pilbara, and you may have heard things to the contrary, the railways for the Pilbara, if they're properly expanded, can handle more than 400 million tonnes down a railway. Now, BHP are probably capable of producing about 155 million tonnes at the moment. Rio can probably produce 200. If they duplicate their railways, it means both of them are running at under 50% capacity. And that's what we're seeking access to, the surplus capacity that would exist when they've duplicated their railways. And Rio's pretty much finished duplicating their railways, and BHP's in the middle of duplicating its railway from Yandi all the way through to Port Hedland. So just bear that in mind, 400 million tonnes of capacity, and at the moment they can't produce more than 155 million tonnes. Would it promote competition in a related market? Well, our view is it promotes competition in a lot of markets. The market for rail haulage is the most obvious one, and look, to make ourselves as little to target as possible, that's the one that we fixed our claim on. And the argument's quite straightforward. At the moment, if you're a small producer and you seek a rail haulage service from the incumbents, who, by the way, under the terms of their state agreements, are obliged to provide that haulage service, they offer you an infinite price. No. If there was another service provider, would they offer a lower price to you? Yes, they would. They'd offer to haul your ore at a reasonable commercial terms, and we'd like to be a service provider offering that service to the small mining companies of the Pilbara. I'm not saying there aren't technical difficulties, but all of them are relatively easily overcome. So we say there'll be a promotion in the competition of rail haulage services in the Pilbara, and by the way, there'll be a whole load of other markets in which the competition will be promoted. Indeed, our view is that the market for seaborne iron ore is not competitive, it's oligopolistic, and anything that encourages new entries into that market will also be a promotion of competition. That's not an argument we needed to have. We just decided to stick with the easy one, which is rail haulage. But fundamentally, we believe there'll be a promotion of competition all over the place, and I'll come back to that. There are other, is it a significant asset? I don't think anybody thinks the railways of the Pilbara aren't significant assets. Is there an effective access regime? Well, clearly not, because nobody's got on. Are there health and safety issues? No. And then we come to the final one, which is the one where BHP and Rio seem to be making their stand in the Australian Competition Tribunal. There's a requirement that if it's declared, it should not be against the public interest. So we don't have to prove that it's in the public interest, we just have to prove that it's not against the public interest. And BHP's arguments are, and Rio's, look, if the railway's declared, it'll deter investment, it'll postpone and delay investment, it'll produce inefficiencies. Now, the beautiful thing about us as an access seeker is we actually own our own railway, and we know how to run heavy haul railways, and we know these arguments not to be true. And basically, that's what we're having an argument about. Just before moving on, I want to go back and cover the production process argument, because there's a lot of myths about whether BHP's railways and Rio's railways should or shouldn't be declared under Part 3A. One of those is the notion somehow that it's BHP and Rio's property, that declaration is socialism by stealth, that it's just wrong, it's their property. Well, that may or may not be true for some railways of the world, but these particular railways were built under state agreements. And they got the right to build the railways on the understanding that they would share those railways with third parties. Now, it's a technical argument, they're actually obliged to provide a haulage service. And we're not seeking haulage service, we're seeking to run our own rolling stock over their railway. For Mindy Mindy, would I accept a haulage service? Yes. When I negotiated for one, I was shown the door, and the only solution I had was to use Part 3A to get access to the track. And again, just to be clear about this, I'm not asking for access to their rolling stock, any of their equipment. I simply want to get on their railway. When there's a vacant slot, I want to run up the railway in that vacant slot and get off again at the other end. No interference with their operations, and by the way, I'm going to pay them a commercial fee for doing it. So far from being a deterrent to investment, I'm actually going to drive down their costs and make them earn a return on what is surplus capacity that they're not utilising. Then there's the notion somehow that Hilmer was never envisaged to cover this type of asset. Well, that's simply not true. Hilmer recognised that it wasn't just public sector assets that had been privatised that should be subject to this regime. It was all infrastructure. And I think the main thing to understand is Hilmer's concern was about deterring investment in private infrastructure. But I said, if you understand what we're seeking access to, we're seeking access to surplus capacity. This is capacity that they're currently earning no return on and could. Now, for the life of me, I can't understand why anybody thinks that giving you money to utilise something that you're not using would be a deterrent to investment. In fact, they'll get a greater return from their asset. And so this notion that somehow there will be some loss of dynamic efficiency because people won't invest, simply not true. They're going to have more revenue to invest in expanding their capacity. Then there's the myth that somehow this opens up the opportunity for people to get access to car production lines. Well, the first thing is under Part 3A, it must be a significant asset. And I don't think anybody thinks that a conveyor operating inside a car factory would qualify as being a significant asset. But more importantly, what we've sought access to is the track. So if the analogy is with a conveyor, we're effectively seeking the use of the land on which the conveyor sits, effectively. We're not asking for the train and the rolling stock. We're just asking to run on the road in a manner that won't interfere with their activities, and we're prepared to pay a commercial fee for doing that. Then the final one is the railways of the Pilbara. Gosh, if they're declared, they'll end up like the East Coal assets. Well, it's difficult to know where to begin with this one. It's just simply untrue. Nobody's ever said that BHP and Rio will lose control of their railways, stop being the owner, stop being the operator, stop controlling the whole lot. As I've explained, we just want to come on to a vacant slot, utilise it along the length of the track, and get off without interfering with their activities. It won't interfere with any decisions they make, other than their need to schedule us in with and around their existing operations. So where do we go from here? We've got a tribunal ruling coming up. Contrary to what people believe, it doesn't get us the right to access the railway. It gets us what we've always sought, which is the right to commercially negotiate with them to see if we can reach a contractual arrangement that both sides are happy with. Again, explain to me why the right to negotiate commercial terms would result in deterrence of investment. It wouldn't. It's not the sort of regime that we agreed to apply to our railway. It's not a stand out there open access regime where there are certain rules that everybody knows about and they have to be one size fits all. It will be, we sit down, we negotiate. Sure, if we can't reach commercial agreement, then we've got a right to call in the arbiter, but only in relation to the terms that couldn't be commercially agreed. What do I think is going to happen? Well, unfortunately, I think that once we get a tribunal really reading, I think the result will be positive. I think we'll start to negotiate with them. I fear, given the history of the relationship to date over this particular issue, that we're not going to see a commercial outcome and that we'll end up in arbitration. But that's not our choice. Our choice would be a commercial negotiation. And unfortunately, if it goes to arbitration, that arbitration is appealable to the Australian Competition Tribunal. So if you think we're about to get access to their railway, don't hold your breath. Now, the subject today, third-party access, workable or a pipe dream. When I first joined Fortescue, I was asked, look at this state agreement. Do you think we could get access to the railways using this state agreement? Now, I'm not a lawyer, but I looked at it and said, I think I can see about 9 different reasons as to why you'd never get access using the state agreement. And basically, it's because the state agreement is what I term a relational. It's relational rather than contractual. It's like a marriage. You can't write into a marriage contract exactly how you will love, honour and obey. It just has to be on good faith on both sides. And the problem is that one side of the state agreement hasn't honoured their obligation. Then I was asked to look at Part 3A, and I looked at it, and I said to Andrew, if you want access to the railways, this can get you access. Now, at the time, the legal advice, it would take 2 years. That legal advice was wrong. But the basic sentiment was right. We would get access if we persevered, and that's what we've done. Is there a solution to this? Perhaps some comments on this. I think either could get you access, but in terms of the state agreements, there needs to be much more written into them. The problem with state agreements is, no matter how much whoever's implementing them may threaten, both parties to a state agreement recognise that it's in their interest for the relationship to remain good and ongoing. Nobody wants to stop mergers. Nobody wants to stop rationalisation. And so there's no real leverage in a state agreement short of saying, I'm going to cancel your state agreement, and that's not in anybody's interest. So unfortunately, the state agreements, you've either got to put terms in at the time they're negotiated, and that's what we got with our railway. We got a requirement to put it under the rail access regime. Or you have to find a way to threaten your partner in a way that hurts them and not you. And that's the problem. Most of the threats the state can wield hurt the state as much as they do the mining companies, and so they're not credible. As for Part 3A, I think the problem with it is it's got the teeth, it takes too long, and it's just a bizarre process that you go through the National Competition Council, you get a decision in your favour, and then it's thrown away and you start again with a competition tribunal. You go through the competition tribunal, get a decision in your favour, and then you start the real work, which is determining what the terms of access would be. And quite frankly, there's too much safeguard put in place to stop the assets being declared, because the safeguards should all be at the point and when you have to negotiate the terms of access. You should make sure that the terms of access don't discourage investment, don't delay, don't cause any problems, or to the extent that they do, they're compensated for. Now, how am I doing for time? Okay. I just wanted to give an overview of the benefits of competition, because lots of people think that the benefit of competition is you've got these monopolies out there, and look, they're charging supernormal profits, and if you had a bit of competition, you'd drive down the profit margin. And in the context of Australia, the profit we're making is from overseas customers, and maybe it's a good thing if Australia has monopoly or oligopoly. They make super profits, they all flow to Australia, it creates wealth for us. And I can see there is a sense in that, but I think we're missing out on what the real benefit of competition is. The real benefit of competition is people being creative and innovative, trying to find new ways to do things, new ways at looking at things, coming up with new products for the customer where everybody benefits. And I just give you some examples. When we started exploring the Pilbara, there was a perceived geological model that said, this is what iron ore deposits look like. BHP and Rio had both drilled through the area where we found 2 billion tonnes of iron ore, and they'd missed it. And they'd missed it because they had this model and they didn't have any other way of looking at it. They were looking for a big, deep, vertical structure that was iron ore going down 300, 400, 500 metres, and they missed 10 metres, 20 metres, that went for 80 kilometres. And it's just, that's what competition does. People going, well, how am I going to find some iron ore? Well, let's see if we can find something that nobody else has found. So we found these sheets of iron ore. We found microplated hematite, which is a good attribute in iron ore, where people said it wouldn't exist. We're producing a new product, the Rocket Fines. There's the beginning of product differentiation. Traditionally, because it's been what I describe as an oligopolistic market, the producers don't compete with each other on price. They've traditionally tried to compete on quality. And so you just don't find much product differentiation out there. There's no cheaper ore being sold at a lower quality. So we've come in with a new product. Chinese absolutely love it. And we're getting benchmark prices for it, but it's a different quality product to what other people have produced. And part of the reason is because we put in new processing facilities. So we have what's called a desand plant. It's a fairly primitive piece of kit, but it strips out some of the silica and some of the alumina to make what would otherwise be a waste product into something very valuable. So very value-adding, and again, come about because of different ideas. But there's more. The railways. We've designed our own ore wagons. They operate at 40 tonnes. We think we'll be able to take it above 40 tonnes. And for those of you, if that doesn't sound a big increase on the 36 that BHP runs at or the 34 that Rio runs at, it is. It's a huge quantum difference because the stresses go up by a factor of a cube in terms of the weight. So this is cutting-edge stuff. But we're running at 40-tonne axles. We're the first people in the world to do it. We designed our own cars. They have a lower center of gravity. They have an aerodynamic profile. They have a long wheelbase. These things travel faster than anybody else's. They carry more weight than anybody else's, and they do less damage to the track while they're doing it because we took a new approach to it. We said, let's design it the way it should be built rather than trying to work on... we put in new braking system. Sorry, now I need to hurry up. A new braking system, electro-pneumatic brakes. They are an absolute revelation. I tell you, all the other producers in the Pilbara will be using them within 5 years. They're just fantastic. We've introduced new mining technology, and if you look at the picture at the bottom, you can see the surface miners that we were so criticised for introducing. If you look at the one on the left, that was the first version that we used, and you look at the one on the right, that's the latest version that we're just introducing. We've put in place more, it's doubled in size. We've put in more than 100 modifications to make it suitable for operating in the Pilbara. You don't have to drill, you don't have to blast, you don't have to do any primary crushing, you do less secondary crushing, you get more lumps, you get less microfines, you get a smooth pit floor so you're not wearing out your tyres as much. I mean, again, 10 years from now, for all bodies that are suitable, everybody will be using it. And that's the benefit of competition, innovation and creativity. So to summarise... we think we're going to do something for the benefit of Australia by promoting competition and getting innovation back into the Pilbara. Mindy Mindy was only ever an archetypal project to drive through our ability to get access to infrastructure. There's been an unending propaganda campaign against us. I just looked up propaganda in Google and then highlighted all the terms that were covered under it. and almost every single one has been played against us, except for the last one. I made that one up, Reductio ad Orcus, which means basically making an ogre out of something, so that, and in this case, it's regulation. People say, oh, regulation, dreadful, they're going to regulate the railways of the Pilbara and the productivity will fall. Absolute nonsense. What we've asked for and what we've sought all along, and I've been completely clear about this, I want the right to negotiate access commercially. I understand the requirements of running a heavy oil railway. I understand the need for flexibility, and I want the same flexibility from the incumbent as I would give to anybody else. So let me leave it at that. Thank you.